Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Susan Shand and Brian Lynn. Later, we will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, former Brazilian President Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva walked out of jail last week. The Brazilian politician, known as Lula, was released after the country's Supreme Court ruled that a person can be put in prison only after all appeals have been tried. Now, Lula could either return to prison or campaign to again become president. Current president Jair Bolsonaro is unpopular. But Lula's newly found freedom may increase political tension in South America's biggest country. Also, a group of Supreme Court justices will soon hear an appeal from Lula's defense lawyers. The lawyers say that the judge who ruled on the corruption charges against Lula did not act fairly. Judge Sergio Moro sent Lula to jail after finding him guilty in the corruption investigation known as Operation Car Wash. 74-year-old Lula had been in prison for 19 months of a nearly 9-year sentence. He is also facing several other corruption charges. If the Supreme Court justices overturn Lula's several convictions, he will be permitted to run for office. He might run as the Workers' Party candidate in the 2022 presidential election. However, if he loses the appeal on any one of his other corruption charges, he could return to prison. Following last week's Supreme Court ruling, lawmakers have said they want a constitutional amendment requiring jail time for a person who loses their first appeal. Both the lower house and Senate are examining constitutional amendments on this subject. However, nothing is likely to happen this year because constitutional amendments take longer to pass than normal bills. The charge that Moro ruled unfairly against Lula had been stalled since December of 2018. At that time, Supreme Court Justices Edson Fachin and Carmen Lúcia took a stand against it. Justice Gilmar Mendes requested another look at the case. He spoke with Reuters in August. Annulling Lula's conviction as a result of Moro's role will lead to a new trial. That could happen, Mendes said. The right verdict is not just a guilty verdict. This is not correct. We have to recognize that we owe Lula a fair trial. Many Brazilians who voted for Bolsonaro in 2018 support Operation Car Wash. The wide-reaching corruption investigation started in 2014. It has found wrongdoing in several South American countries and has put Lula and other Brazilian politicians in jail.
Important interest rates in Europe and Japan have been negative for several years. The moves, however, could provide a warning about what happens when central banks' efforts to support growth create problems instead. That is the idea expressed last week by finance officials and others at the Reuters Global Investment Outlook 2020 summit. They argue that the effects of below-zero interest rates are long-lasting and harmful. Interest rates are negative when lenders, not borrowers, must pay interest. Critics say negative rates punish people who save money, cause problems for big banks, and lead people to take bigger risks to get a small amount of interest. About $12.5 trillion of the world's bonds, about 30% of the debt of countries in the developed world, pay negative interest. The Bank of Japan and the European Central Bank want economic growth and a small amount of inflation, so they have cut their interest rates to below zero. However, a negative interest rate policy helps keep other interest rates, like the ones banks pay savers, low. That means older people saving for retirement or in retirement are losing money, explained a recent blog post by BlackRock. BlackRock and other investors say the U.S. Federal Reserve, under Chairman Jerome Powell, has been closely watching the situation in Europe and Japan. They say Powell wants to avoid negative rates in the United States. When you listen to Powell and other representatives of the Fed, they don't want to take rates negative, said Dan Iveson. He is an investment officer at bond seller Pacific Investment Management Company. It will be well down the list of the tools that they will use, he said. The moves by Europe and Japan's central banks have raised a question about what tools others, such as the U.S. Federal Reserve, have to fight a slowing economy. The U.S. Central Bank last month cut its overnight lending rate by a fourth of a percentage point to a target somewhere between 1.5% and 1.75%. U.S. President Donald Trump has suggested that the Federal Reserve push interest rates into negative numbers as a way to permit the U.S. government to refinance its $22 trillion in debt. That is unlikely to happen, some of the financial experts at the meetings said. Never say never, but there is a real hesitancy here in the U.S. to take rates below zero, said Greg Peters. He is with the investment company PGIM Fixed Income. I think the U.S. has had the benefit of seeing the effects of negative rates elsewhere, he added. Negative interest rates do not always lead to an increase in lending and growing business investment. Negative rates can cause financial organizations to earn less. If their profits are affected, they might stop lending altogether, and that would hurt the economy. Anne Mathias supervises investing at Vanguard. She is an expert in worldwide interest rates. She said negative interest rates are unlikely. If we go into a recession, we will just go back to quantitative easing and expand the balance sheet again, she said. Andrew Tsu is a manager of the Double Line Total Return Bond Fund. he warned about the effects of negative rates. If we had negative rates for the next 10 to 20 years, no one in this room will be able to retire, he said. I'm Susan Shand.
Scientists say they have developed a system that uses machine learning to predict when and where lightning will strike. Researchers report the system is able to predict lightning strikes up to 30 minutes before they happen within a 30-kilometer area. The research was led by engineers from the Swiss Federal Institute of Technology in Lausanne, Switzerland. The results were reported in the publication Climate and Atmospheric Science. Lightning is a strong burst of electricity in the atmosphere. It is one of the oldest observed weather events on Earth. It can strike between clouds or between a cloud and the ground. Since lightning carries an extremely powerful electrical charge, it can be destructive and deadly. It is difficult to know exactly how many people die of lightning-related causes. European researchers have estimated that between 6,000 and 24,000 people are killed by lightning worldwide each year. The strikes can also cause power outages, destroy property, damage electrical equipment, and start forest fires. For this reason, climate scientists have long sought to develop methods to predict and control lightning. In the United States and other places, ground-based sensing devices are used to identify strikes as they happen. But no system has been created to effectively predict or stop lightning. The system tested in the experiments uses a combination of data from weather stations and machine learning methods. The researchers developed a prediction model that was trained to recognize weather conditions that were likely to cause lightning. The model was created with data collected over a 12-year period from 12 Swiss weather stations in cities and mountain areas. The data related to four main surface conditions: air pressure, air temperature, relative humidity, and wind speed. The atmospheric data was placed into a machine learning algorithm, which compared it to records of lightning strikes. Researchers say the algorithm was then able to learn the conditions under which lightning happens. Once trained, the system made predictions that proved correct almost 80% of the time, the Swiss Federal Institute of Technology said in a statement. It can now be used anywhere. Amir Hossein Mostajabi is a PhD student at the Institute who led the development of the method. He said current systems for gathering such data are slow and complex and require costly collection equipment like radar or satellites. Our method uses data that can be obtained from any weather station, Mostajabi said. This will improve data collection in very remote areas not covered by radar and satellite or in places where communication systems have been cut, he added. The researchers plan to keep developing the technology in partnership with a European effort that aims to create a lightning protection system. The effort is called the European Laser Lightning Rod Project. Scientists working on the Paris-based project are experimenting with a laser technology that could someday control lightning activity. The idea is that powerful ground-based lasers can be positioned in the sky to direct energy from lightning. The experiments involve the use of lasers to transfer lightning charges from clouds to the ground. The method uses a lightning rod placed at the base of the laser to take in electrical charges from lightning in the clouds. I'm Brian Lynn.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. In the summer of 1858, two candidates campaigned across the state of Illinois for a seat in the United States Senate. That seat belonged to Stephen Douglas from the Democratic Party. He was seeking re-election. His opponent was a lawyer from the newly established Republican Party. His name was Abraham Lincoln. This week in our series, Frank Oliver and Larry West tell us about this campaign of statewide but also national importance.
Abraham Lincoln proposed that he and Stephen Douglas hold several debates. The rules for each debate would be the same. One man would speak for an hour. His opponent would speak for an hour and a half. Then the first man would speak for half an hour to close the debate. Douglas agreed. There were seven debates in all. They were held in towns throughout Illinois. In some places, there was great interest in what the two candidates had to say. Thousands of people attended. Douglas was a short, heavy man. One reporter said he looked like a fierce bulldog. Douglas' friends and supporters called him the Little Giant. Lincoln was just the opposite. He was very tall and thin, with long arms and legs. His clothes did not fit well, and he had a plain face, one which many thought was ugly. He looked more like a simple farmer than a candidate for the United States Senate.
The Lincoln-Douglas debates covered party politics and the future of the nation. But everything the two men discussed was tied to one issue, slavery. Douglas spoke first at the first debate. He questioned a statement made in one of Lincoln's campaign speeches. Lincoln had said that the United States could not continue to permit slavery in some areas while banning it in others. He said the Union could not stand so divided. It must either permit slavery everywhere or nowhere. Douglas did not agree. He noted that the country had been half slave and half free for 70 years. Why then, he asked, should it not continue to exist that way? The United States was a big country. What was best for one part might not be best for another.
Then Douglas questioned Lincoln's statement on the Supreme Court's Dred Scott decision. Lincoln had said he opposed the decision because it did not permit Negroes to enjoy the rights of citizenship. Douglas said he believed the decision was correct. He said it was clear that the government had been made by white men for white men. He said he opposed Negro citizenship. I do not accept the Negro as my equal, Douglas said, and I deny that he is my brother. However, he said, this does not mean I believe that Negroes should be slaves. Negroes should enjoy every possible right that does not threaten the safety of the society in which they live. Every state and territory must decide for itself what these rights will be. Illinois decided that Negroes will not be citizens, but that it will protect their life, property, and civil rights. It keeps from Negroes only political rights and refuses to make Negroes equal to white men. That policy satisfies me, Douglas said. And it satisfies the Democratic Party.
Then Lincoln spoke. First, he denied that the Republican Party was an abolitionist party. I have no purpose, he said, either directly or indirectly, to interfere with slavery where it exists. I believe I have no legal right to do so, nor do I wish to do so. I do not, Lincoln said, wish to propose political and social equality between the white and black races. But, he went on, there is no reason in the world why Negroes should not have all the natural rights listed in the Declaration of Independence, the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. I agree with Judge Douglas, Lincoln said, that the Negro is not my equal in many ways, certainly not in color, perhaps not mentally or morally. But in the right to eat the bread that his own hand earns, he is my equal and the equal of Judge Douglas and the equal of every living man.
Lincoln then defended his statement that the United States could not continue half slave and half free. He said he did not mean that customs or institutions must be the same in every state. He said it was healthy and necessary for differences to exist in a country so large. He said different customs and institutions helped unite the country, not divide it. But Lincoln questioned if slavery was such an institution. He said slavery had not tied the states of the Union together, but had always been an issue that divided them. How had the country existed half slave and half free for so many years? Lincoln asked. Because, he said, the men who created the government believed that slavery was only temporary. Once people understood that slavery was not permanent, the crisis would pass. Slavery could be left alone in the South until it slowly died. That way, Lincoln said, would be best for both the white and black races.
Stephen Douglas and Abraham Lincoln were campaigning for a Senate seat from the state of Illinois. But their debates had national importance, too. Douglas expected to be the Democratic candidate for president in 1860. His statements could win or lose him support for that contest. Whenever possible, he tried to show that he was a man of the people, like Lincoln. He tried to show that his Democratic Party was a national party, while the Republican Party was a party only of the North. And he tried to show that Lincoln's policies would lead to civil war.
Lincoln, for his part, may have looked like a simple farmer, but he was a very smart lawyer and politician. He asked questions which he knew would cause trouble for Douglas. He wanted to create a split between Douglas and his supporters in the South. Lincoln also wanted to keep alive the debate over slavery. That, he said, is the real issue. That is the issue that will continue in this country when these poor tongues of Judge Douglas and myself are silent. It is the eternal struggle between right and wrong.
In Illinois in 1858, the state legislature chose the men who would represent the state in the National Senate. So Stephen Douglas and Abraham Lincoln had to depend on legislative support to get to Washington. On Election Day, the legislative candidates supporting Lincoln won 4,000 more popular votes than the candidates supporting Douglas. But because of the way election areas had been organized, the Douglas Democrats won a majority of seats. The newly elected legislature chose him to be senator.
Lincoln was sad that he had not won, but he said he was glad to have tried. The campaign, he said, gave me a hearing on the great question of the age, which I could have had in no other way. And though I now sink out of view and shall be forgotten, I believe I have made some marks which will tell for the cause of civil liberty long after I have gone. Many people, however, did not think Abraham Lincoln would be forgotten. His campaign speeches had been published everywhere in the East. His name was becoming widely known. People began to speak of him as a presidential candidate. To win the presidential election of 1860, the Republican Party had decided it needed a man of the people. He must be a good politician and leader. He must be opposed to slavery, but not too extreme. Many people thought Lincoln could be that man.
After the election in Illinois, Lincoln made several speaking trips in the western states. In none of his speeches did he say he might be a candidate for president in 1860. If anyone said anything about Lincoln for president, he would answer that he did not have the ability. Or he would say there were better men in the party than himself. Lincoln said, "Only events can make a president." He would wait for those events.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.